know my secret. He's not saying anything because he's polite, but does he really see through me and know that somewhere are the awful awfuls and that I'm a little bit upsettable? This is all part of religious competition. If you go to the Roman Catholics and you've been psychoanalyzed, you see, they'll say, well, that's fine, but of course it's not nearly enough. I mean, that's all very well so far as it goes, but... Or if you're a Roman Catholic and you go to a Buddhist outfit that's on a missionary basis, they'll say, yes, of course, through your Catholicism, you've learned some of the basic virtues, but of course, Catholicism doesn't go anywhere near the heart of things. In that it doesn't have an elaborate system of meditation like we have. Then you go over to the Hindu school and they say, yes, the Buddhists go to a certain point. They do attain a very, very high stage of realization, but there is nevertheless something higher than that, which they don't quite get. And you will find this all round the world, everybody claiming to have that little special extra essence which the others don't have. Now, why are they doing that? Are they all frauds? Are they all out to get you into their society? Sometimes, yes. But sometimes they're trying to see whether you fall for this, testing you out. This is upaya, skillful method. And if you become falling for that little extra special thing that's just supposed to be around the corner, no? Then they've got you. Or rather, you've got yourself in a mix. And you have to work at that and work at that and work at that until you find out that you were being made a monkey of. But you were being made a monkey of because you could be made a monkey of. You hadn't really arrived where you are. You didn't have the nerve to be you. That is to say, to be the self. And so you had always to feel that there was something beyond that. The stage higher. See? So that's why, for example, masonry is such a success. It has 33 degrees. And you know, you can go up that ladder and get higher and higher status. The more degrees, the merrier. There have been things that have vented hundreds of degrees. And they're an immense success. Because you can postpone it longer and longer. Like Achilles overtaking the tortoise. He doesn't overtake it in the problem because we keep dividing and dividing the space between Achilles and the tortoise as he approaches the tortoise. What delays Achilles overtaking the tortoise is not Achilles, but our calculations about how he approaches it. We make the calculations more and more complicated as he gets nearer and nearer to the tortoise. But it's only the calculations that put it off. Achilles, in fact, runs right by. So in the same way, you can calculate yourself out of liberation. You can put it off indefinitely by inventing new degrees and new stages. But actually, when you get it, you don't get it. You suddenly see it. It happens instantly. It happens instantly whether you put in 30 years practice or whether you put in 3 minutes. It's the same. It suddenly dawns on you that that's the way things are. Tattvamasi. Medieval society in the West, comparable to Hindu society, allowed people to check out of the game. It revered and encouraged hermits, monks, nuns of various types of discipline. There's this difference, you see, for the West and India. You couldn't join the Brahmana caste, the priest caste, from some other caste. But in the European caste system, by becoming a priest,
or a cleric of any kind. You see, a cleric means simply a literate person. You could familiarize with any other caste once you're in that one. And so it was a wonderful way of rising in society. You could, from being a serf, go to being a priest, to being an archbishop, and consort with the nobility. It was the only way open to cross castes, you see. And because they were the literate people, it was through literacy and through universities founded by clerics that our caste system began to break. And we got the idea of choosing your own vocation and not simply following what your parents did. Now, I want to make an observation here about checking out of the game. This is not encouraged in contemporary society. Because the Catholic Church and the, say, the Episcopalian Church are very powerful minorities, they can still support monasteries and even hermits. But you can't be one on your own without great difficulty. Firstly, because you're a poor consumer. See, around here, we have a number of hermits. There's a guy out there building that boat, and he's essentially a non-joiner, a poor consumer. And the community, they live a lot along here. And they're mostly, they're not working-class people. They are people who dropped out of college because they saw it was stupid. And they're that sort of people. We would call them perhaps beatniks. But you see, the city doesn't like it because they aren't owning the right sort of cars, and therefore the local car salesman isn't doing business through them. They don't have lawns, and so nobody can sell them lawnmowers. They hardly use dishwashers, appliances of that kind. They don't need them. And also they wear blue jeans and things like that, and so the local dress shops feel a bit put out having these people around. And they live very simply. Well, you mustn't do that. You've got to live in a complicated way. You've got to have the kind of car, you know, that identifies you as a person of substance and status and all that. So there's a great problem here in our society. Now, why is there this problem? There's always a very inconsiderable minority of these non-joiners or people who check out of the game. But you will find that insecure societies are the most intolerant of those who are non-joiners. They are so unsure of the validity of their game rules that they say everyone must play. Now that's a double bind. You can't say to a person, you must play, because what you're saying is you are required to do something which will be acceptable only if you do it voluntarily. You see? So everyone must play is the rule in the United States. And it's the rule in almost all Republican governments. I mean Republican in the sense of democratic. Because they're very uneasy. Because everybody is responsible. You mean you may try not to be and avoid it and say, oh, let the senators take care of it or the president. But theoretically, everyone's responsible. Now, that's terrifying. See, it's all right when you know what's right. There is an aristocracy, there is the clergy, and they know what should be done, and they're used to ruling, you see. But now it's in your hands. You say, well, what are we going to do? Well, I think this way, and you think that way, and he thinks the other way. And so we're all unsettled. And therefore, we become more and more conformist. Individualism, rugged individualism, always leads to conformism because people get scared. And so they herd together and compounded with industrial society, mass production, etc. They all wear the same clothes and they're sensible clothes that don't show the dirt too much And we get duller and drabber, and with the exception of the Californian Revolution. So the reason for this is, in a way, that democracy as we have tried it started out on the wrong foot. You see, in the scriptures, the Christian scriptures, it says everybody is equal in the sight of God. Now that's a mystical utterance. That means that from the standpoint of God, all people are divine and are playing their true function. And that is something that is true on a certain plane of consciousness. But come down a step and try to apply the mystical insight in the practical affairs of everyday life, and what do you get? You get a parody of mysticism. You get the idea not that everybody is equal in the sight of God, but that all people are equally inferior. And that's why all bureaucracies are rude, why the police are rude, and why you are made to wait in lines and are obstreperous income tax individuals and all that sort of person. Because everybody's a crook. Everybody's equally inferior. See, that becomes the parody of democracy. And that kind of society, watch out for it. It turns in a quick click into fascism because of its terror of the outsider. Now, a free and easy society loves outsiders. In fact, it's a little bad for the outsider's integrity because he becomes a holy man, see? And people make salams and give him food and all that. They really take care of the outsider because they know that man is doing for us what we haven't got the guts to do. That outsider who lives up there in the mountain is at the highest peak of human evolution. His consciousness is one with the divine. And great, just there is someone like that around. It makes you feel a little better. He is realized. He knows what it's all about. And so we need a number of those people. Even though they don't join our game, they tell us, you see, what you're doing is only a game. It's okay, I'm not going to condemn you, but it is only a game, and we up on that mountaintop are watching you. We love you, we have compassion for you, and but excuse please, we aren't going to join. So that gives the community great strength, because it tells the government in no uncertain terms that there's something more than government. That's why wise kings kept not only priests, but court fools. The court fool is much more effective than the priest, to remind the king that after all he's human. And you know how in Richard II, where the fool is called the antic, the king says, "Within the hollow crown that rounds the mortal temples of a king keeps death his watch." And there the antic sits, scoffing at his state and grinning at his pomp, allowing him a little time to monarchize, be feared, and kill with looks. And then at last comes death, and with a pin bores through his castle wall, and farewell, king. See, always this reminder of the priest or of the antic to the royalty, to the government. You are going to die. You are mortal. Don't give yourself airs and graces as if you were a god. As king, you are only a representative of God. And there is a force, there are domains way, way beyond yours and way, way higher. But it's very difficult for a republican government to realize that, because it's insecure. And therefore, in our present world, you cannot abandon nationality without the greatest difficulty. People who try to abandon nationality get constantly deported from one place to another.
You must belong to this thing, as Thoreau put it. However far into the forests you may go, men will pursue you and compel you to belong to their desperate company of odd fellows.
This concludes Session 10 of Out of Your Mind, Essential Listening from the Alan Watts Audio Archives. Our program continues with Session 11. Sounds True presents Out of Your Mind, Essential Listening from the Alan Watts Audio Archives. Session 11, The World as Emptiness, with Alan Watts.
This particular weekend seminar is devoted to Buddhism. And it should be said first that there is a sense in which Buddhism is Hinduism stripped for export. Last week when I discussed Hinduism, I discussed many things to do with the organization of Hindu society. Because Hinduism is not merely what we call a religion, it's a whole culture. It's a legal system, it's a social system. It's a system of etiquette, and it includes everything. It includes housing, it includes food, it includes art, because the Hindus and many other ancient peoples do not make, as we do, a division between religion and everything else. Religion is not a department of life. It is something that enters into the whole of it. But you see, when a religion and a culture are inseparable, it's very difficult to export a culture because it comes into conflict with the established traditions, manners, and customs of other people. So the question arises, what are the essentials of Hinduism that could be exported? And when you answer that, approximately, you get Buddhism. As I explained, the essential of Hinduism, the real deep root, isn't any kind of doctrine, it isn't really any special kind of discipline, although, of course, disciplines are involved. The center of Hinduism is an experience called moksha, liberation, in which, through the dissipation of the illusion that each man and each woman is a separate thing in a world consisting of nothing but a collection of separate things, you discover that you are, on one level, an illusion, but on another level, you are what they call the self, the one self, which is all that there is. The universe is the game of the self, which plays hide-and-seek forever and ever. When it plays hide, it plays it so well, hides so cleverly, that it pretends to be all of us and all things whatsoever, and we don't know it because it's playing hide. But when it plays seek, it enters onto a path of yoga, and through following this path, it wakes up, and the scales fall from one's eyes. Now, in just the same way, the center of Buddhism, the only really important thing about Buddhism is the experience which they call awakening. Buddha is a title and not a proper name. It comes from a Sanskrit root, bud, And that sometimes means to know, but better, waking. And so you get from this root